stutterers.
Somehow, in printing the program, the word recovered was put in without quotation marks, which I think probably most of us would feel more comfortable with. By this time, we have, in this country and in this association, accumulated quite a number of individuals who are now very talkative and sometimes too fluent, although they have, in the past, stuttered very severely in various degrees. Sometimes the process by which recovery takes place is even more mysterious than the process by which an individual begins to stutter. We felt that it might be stimulating, possibly provide some leads for research, if we could give, from a personal point of view, and as unacademically as academic people can, if we could give an account of what went on, of how we got from there to here. Possibly there is more than one path of recovery from stuttering. Possibly there is more than one way to become a stutterer, and maybe there's also more than one way out of the jungle that we know as stuttering. And we hope to provide some research leads and some therapy leads from this symposium this afternoon. I know that once a group of stutterers, especially quote-unquote recovered stutterers, get together, it's very hard to get a word in edgewise, and so I'm going to take advantage of my situation as chairman to get in my first say here. I'm also going to try to keep my own presentation, I hope, fairly brief, and thereby set a pattern so that we can have ample time for discussion. Some of the questions which I've tried to consider in my own case, and which might be worth considering for the panel generally, would be these. First, what were the predominant features of your own particular case of stuttering as you see them now? Second, by what processes did you improve? Third, what problems resulted from your improvement? That is, what adjustments did you have to make as a result of the improvement? We had two cases which illustrate how problems can result from improvement. One was an adolescent who at the age of 15 made a very startling recovery, and his parents brought in a very revealing complaint. His father was a prominent attorney, and he had this to say: "We're very pleased about Bill's speech, and we think he's made a wonderful recovery, and his personality has changed, but we're a little alarmed at the direction he's taken. He isn't respectful of our authority anymore. He sasses his teachers, he tells us to go to hell, he's really doing a lot of things he's never done before." You see, Bill was apparently celebrating his fluency like a yes man on his vacation, saying no to everything and to everybody. In another case, a recovery from stuttering almost produced a divorce. An accountant named George, who was 31 years old, had married a woman possibly as an escape from the necessity for talking, and she was attracted to him as one who would never dispute her verbal domination. And when he made a pretty good recovery from his stuttering, the balance of power shifted. He had found his tongue and he used it to lash back at her, and the storms that followed almost broke up the marriage. And I wonder whether some of us have had problems of these kinds. Anyway, to the case of Joe Sheehan as one stutterer, in terms of the problem itself, unlike a lot of stutterers, apparently my symptoms didn't first appear in the home. My stuttering seemed to have started in school. I had a pretty easy time talking to my parents and in a home situation long after I began to have trouble in school. I never did have a lot of trouble talking to my parents, except when I had to call up my father, who was managing editor of our local paper, at his office and go through the telephone switchboard, and especially near under the time pressure of a news deadline, then I would feel pressure and then I would have more trouble. But I did have a lot of trouble to other authority figures and to teachers and in school generally. And the fear that I felt was not a fear of stuttering as doing a specific thing, that is, it was not a fear of doing that particular act, but rather it was a very devastating fear that I could never say the word that I had to say, that I could never say it at all, and sometimes I couldn't. Like most stutterers, I became kind of a ham actor and learned to play phony roles. I learned to use distractions. I learned that most of the suggestions that people make didn't really help me. I had an understanding fourth grade teacher, and I must say that most of my teachers were really pretty helpful, even though I had trouble in school. It wasn't any direct consequence of any improper handling on their part. I had one teacher who put a copy of Blanton and Blanton, Speech Training for Children, 1924 edition, in my hands, and there I found a phrase that somehow fitted my needs. It was this: under no circumstances should a stutterer ever be put in a situation in which he can't say what he wants to say, or words to that effect. And I tried to live up to that as much as I could with the stuttering I had, and I think that probably really helped me. I found that I could sometimes take a role, be somebody else, be something other than myself, and get along pretty well. In high school, I surprised everybody who knew me and had heard me by giving fluently the verdict while serving as foreman of the jury in one of these mock trials that you have in high school. I was able to say very fluently, "We, the jury, find the defendant not guilty." I was able to deliver that verdict with perfect fluency. Now, possibly if we had found the defendant guilty, I couldn't have done it. But at least that was one high point in the occasional moments of fluency I had. And I used to alternate, as I suppose a lot of us have, between hope that I would wake up next Tuesday morning and find myself speaking fluently, and a feeling of utter discouragement that anything could ever really be done for this thing that I had. And I used to hear, like most of us have, three times daily the story of Demosthenes, and used to wonder whether, if I didn't stutter, I would be a great speaker. And when I went into college, I chose a non-speaking vocation, chemistry, because I could get along with the laboratory and I could work with things even if I couldn't communicate so well with people. And I even got a bachelor's degree in chemistry and spent about 4 years as a chemist. In the meanwhile, I got my real start by going to Dr. Ben Riper, who kind of, I would say, got me started on the right track, although he would tell you that I had the brakes on most of the way, and I was something of a black sheep, and he probably considers me one of his conspicuous early failures, although I don't really view it that way, in his work with stutterers. Later on, while assisting Wendell Johnson, I also had a chance to learn a somewhat different point of view on stuttering, and a number of new points of view to me. I learned perhaps I could lick this problem without controlling anything or controlling my stuttering, and I, in ways that I can't fully verbalize, feel very deeply indebted to both Dr. Ben Riper and Dr. Johnson. I spent a couple of years in Van Riper's clinic, being one of his more resistant stutterers, and I tried to work with in a student clinician role with some other stutterers, and I found that I was avoiding things more than they were, and I was stuttering more than they were, And I was following my advice or suggestions or recommendations or the clinic recommendations, probably less than they were. And it was mostly on my own later on, while working at the chemist, that I was really able to do something about my own stuttering. And I know that looking back, you have a hindsight, and you have probably a process of intellectualization. I've probably used what knowledge of clinical psychology I have to construct still more ingenious defenses than stutterers ordinarily have. But here are some of the principles of the processes that I would specify as being important to me in my own particular case. First, a complete reduction of any avoidance, of any holding back. A complete reduction of this approach avoidance conflict of going ahead versus holding back. And like some other stutters, I sort of stuttered my way out of it. A good deal of it was simply a blind attack, a blind going forward. I've never really been able to control my stuttering in any special way, and I never know from one moment to another whether I will have a severe block. I've taught enough years now so that I don't have very much apprehension about it, but theoretically, if I got in a block right now, I have no special strings I can pull to get out of it. I would only try to handle it in such a way that I would not be covering up, I would not be holding back, and in the future, in such situations, I would be getting along better, and I would have less avoidance tendency. A second process that I think is very important to me was the reduction of guilt. My stuttering bothered me, sure, but after a while I got used to it in a certain way. I got kind of accustomed to it, like you get accustomed to any old ache or any old inconvenience. But I could see that I kept bothering other people. I used to feel more sorry for them sometimes than I did for myself. And I used to feel kind of guilty because I knew that my stuttering would bother others. By learning that it was all right to be a stutterer, and that perhaps I wasn't hurting people as much as I had feared, that by learning this, I lost some of the guilt, and I think that was an important dynamic going on. Third, there have been a number of changes of self-concept. I think of myself as a stutterer. I try to integrate my own thinking about myself in that sense. I think probably going into speech pathology has been one positive step in accepting very fully this role of a stutterer, and in incorporating the stuttering in my own concept of myself. And fourth, as a process, I'd specify an integration of role. I used to suffer a lot of role conflicts before. Part of the time I was a stutterer, part of the time I wasn't. Part of the time I could fool people through false fluency, part of the time I had fluency that didn't seem to be so false. It just happened. And I never knew where I stood, in a way. And I used to alternate between trying to be a normal speaker and being the stutterer that I was. I think I have managed to integrate my own role. I have adjusted to the fluency I now have. I have adjusted, I think, to the disappointment that comes, or that did come for me to a certain extent, from the fact of my recovery. Oscar Wilde has a saying that there are two ways to be disappointed in life. One way is never to get what we wish for, the other way is to get it. And I think with me, fluency has been something like that, that I discovered that the Demosthenes legend is not particularly true, that I am not a giant in chains, that I am not an orator mysteriously blocked, but rather an ordinary person or a teacher or an ordinary speaker. And I have lost a great deal of this giant in chains complex that I think possibly at one time I had. Other than that, I don't think I have suffered a lot of problems for my recovery. Perhaps people around me have. I don't think I ever enjoyed my stuttering, consciously, of course. I think that the adjustments to my recovery have been fairly comfortable in my own case. I enjoy speaking a great deal, but then I did even when I stuttered, and I'll bet most of the rest of us have done that too. Here are a few high points, just as episodes I'll mention, and then I'll close my presentation of Joe Sheehan Sutter. Can you hear me all right? Is there anyone in the back who can't hear me? The others can hear me. You're just resisting. Very briefly then, here are a few high points, and I could probably go on specifying a number of them, but these are just episodes that occurred to me as I've been thinking about this. One is the influence of an older stutterer, a very stubborn Dutchman who had worked with Van Riper, fellow by the name of Jack DeBoer. I was very impressed when I saw him stuttering very openly and comfortably to his roommate. I had never seen anybody stutter and not be ashamed of it before. Always before it had been something very shameful, and I think this really had quite an influence on me. Then there was the time I spoke to the Optimist Club in Kalamazoo and gave the world's shortest speech, but in terms of content at least, I said, I. This was all I got out in about 2 minutes of struggling. Dr. Van Riper was making the presentation. He had a group of stutterers before and after. I was before at that time. And after I finally finished this one block, he figured that I had had about enough struggle for one situation, and he asked me to sit down. And I sat down feeling about this high, and after the presentation, Dr. Van Riper made his usual fine talk, and people came up afterwards to congratulate him, but a surprising number to me came up to congratulate me, saying such things as, boy, you've got guts, you'll get along all right. The idea of getting up there and saying this trying to speak even when you have that much trouble doing it. And I think that was kind of a high point, too. I had done about as much stuttering in that situation as I ever thought I could possibly do. Everything after that was kind of an anticlimax in terms of the stuttering I did. Some people have no liking for Babbitts, but I've always had a very warm spot in my heart for the Optimist Club. And a third step, a third high point, I think, was in trying to treat other stutterers. I became a speech therapist at Percy Jones Hospital. I married the boss, and I think that a number of important things happened to me. I got a lot of support, I got a new role, a new conception of myself, and the effect of marriage, I think, and the effect of taking up speech therapy as a means of making a living probably make up part of the high point. I have sometimes thought of dedicating my recovery somewhat as follows. If you recall the dedication of a fairly widely used text of speech correction, I would say that this recovery is dedicated to my wife, who refuses to allow her name to appear as co-author. That's all for my presentation.